This week's show is dedicated to all the Pittsburgh G20 protesters.
Okay, do not turn your TV volume up, please. But also, please do not be alarmed by the sound in this little bit of tape that we're about to play. This is a sound cannon being deployed against protesters at the G20 economic meeting by Pittsburgh police. That bowel liquefying annoyance is a sound cannon, or in military speak, an LRAD, a long-range acoustic device, being used at not at all that long a range against Americans protesting at the G20 summit. Sound cannons can emit noise as loud as 151 decibels, the equivalent of an unsilenced gunshot being fired 3 feet from your ear. 151 decibels. For perspective, they say you can get permanent hearing loss from 110 decibels of sound, even if it's just in short bursts, not a constant sound barrage like you get from the LRAD. Adding to the cartoon villain effect, Pittsburgh police mounted the sound cannons on these menacing matte black trucks, complete with balaclava-clad ninja dudes dressed all in black, aiming the thing in the back. According to city officials, this was the first time the sound cannon had been used for crowd control in Pittsburgh. But police also used tear gas and stun grenades that explode with sharp flashes of light and beanbag projectiles shot out of guns. And, of course, the good old-fashioned nightstick.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. It's finally the tables are starting.
This week in radical history for the week starting September 28th. What we got to say, yeah. The power. Inspiration came from Slingshot Organizer, and more radical info can be found at the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This week in radical history for September 28th, 1893, Emma Goldman goes on trial in New York City, sent back to the Tombs until the 18th of October, the day sent for sentence, with the judge giving a new rent-free home for a year in Blackwater Island Penitentiary. Her crime, given a speech. Also on September 28, 1901, in the Philippines, guerrillas ambush U.S. troops, killing 48 U.S. soldiers. General Jack Smith orders his troops to kill everyone on the island. Following his butchery, Hell-Roaring Jake was promoted to Brigadier General and put in charge of the Samar campaign to pacify our little brown brothers. In Samar, Smith earned fame with his orders to kill everyone over the age of 10 and make the island in a howling wilderness. In May of 1902, Smith was court-martialed and was forced retired with no other punishment. The travesty of our involvement in the Philippines, when we had designs to turn it into our westernmost state, and many of these turn-of-the-century atrocities go largely forgotten in this country's history. Also on September 28, 1917, 166 Wobblies, Industrial Workers of the World, IWW Union activists, indicted for interfering with the war effort, you know, the war to end all wars, the first move on an illegal but successful U.S. government campaign to cripple the radical union movement. A year later in Canada, the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW Union, is outlawed. Also on this date in 1919, a mob forms outside Omaha, Nebraska courthouse. The courthouse is set afire and Mayor Ed P. Smith is hung. They seize William Brown, a black man, accused of raping a white woman. He was tossed in jail, though he is crippled. The mob gets him, hangs him, shoots him, and then drags his body through the town. After committing these acts of murder, the mob goes on a rampage throughout downtown Omaha, breaking windows and stealing goods from storefronts. Troops are finally called in on the 30th to put an end to the chaos. It is considered one of the most notorious lynchings in U.S. history, involving tens of thousands of good Christian people. Two more items for September 28th, 1973. ITT headquarters in New York is bombed by the Weather Underground in response to U.S.-backed coup in Chile. Lastly, in 1990, President Reagan says, quote, "We have never interfered with the internal government of any country," unquote. This guy was not only elected president, America loves to regale his fairy tales. Yeah, we've never interfered with the internal affairs of any country. Never. Never happened. Pay no attention to the man.
Pay no attention to the man.
This week in radical history for September 29th, 1879, Earlier today, U.S. troops attack a peaceful Ute Indian party while they're working along the Mill River at the reservation run in Colorado's White River Agency. The agency head, Mr. Meeker, frustrated that the Utes would not bow to his wishes to change the form from hunting to farming, so he calls in the Army. Before the fighting ends today, 37 Utes die in a desperate stand to save the reservation from military seizure. The Utes crime, hunting and fishing along the river's edge. Also on September 29, 1906, U.S. sends in the Army to Cuba to protect American interests, like protecting the mob-run casinos and sex tourism for wealthy Americans. Also on this date in 1921 in Russia, the Cheka Bolshevik secret police execute Vanya Boron and 9 other anarchist prisoners. Trotsky, who ordered the execution, remarks at the time, "We do not imprison the real anarchists, but criminals and bandits who cover themselves by claiming to be anarchists." Emma Goldman would write about the execution of Fannin Brownin. Fannin was a type of Russian woman completely concentrated in the cause of humanity. I find it funny that at the same time in America, the Palmer raids continue to round up anarchists and other radicals, imprison and or deport them. Interesting that two supposedly completely different political systems, communism and capitalism democracy, works towards wiping out anarchists. Why, you might ask? Because the anti-authoritarian philosophy of anarchists is a potent threat to these top-down, chauvinistic, unequal organizing of society. Also on this date in 1936, 11 members of the Detroit Black Legion, a security arm of the Michigan KKK, convicted of the murder of Charles Poli, a WPA organizer. The KKK Black Legion is organized along military lines. The Michigan Legion had 5 brigades, 16 regiments, 64 battalions, 256 companies, and probably numbered between 20,000 and 30,000 members, one-third of whom lived in Detroit. The Legion saw as its enemies not only blacks, Jews, and Catholics, but also welfare workers and recipients, and labor union organizing. It is true that racism rears its ugly head in the southern states. However, Jim Crow laws and anti-black attitudes abound in northern states as well, still to this day. Here's a short segment from Black Agenda Radio.
A recent Associated Press Yahoo survey of racial attitudes found disturbingly high levels of anti-black prejudice among whites of both major political parties and among white independents. One-third of white Democrats displayed negative feelings towards African Americans, as did 40% of all white Americans. Observers of black politics have long known that white polling data is unreliable in elections pitting white candidates against blacks. Consistently, over the space of decades, significant portions of the white electorate have been shown to overstate their willingness to vote for an African American. That is, they lie. Of course, projecting white behavior in the absence of prejudice is the ultimate fantasy, given the foundational role racism has played in American life. But in real life, such voters simply find some other reason to vote against the black candidate, and are therefore never forced to confront their racism. And those reasons are potentially infinite. Between 20 and 30% of whites of all parties associate blacks with the words violent, boastful, and complaining. This is certainly nothing new to Barack Obama, since he's hired the best in-house pollsters that Goldman Sachs money can buy, which may explain why he denounces blacks who complain and paints young black men with the broad brush of irresponsibility, the better to convince whites that he understands or even shares their racial attitudes. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
That was an edited version of Black Agenda Radio.
This is your regional reporter, Citra Cacate. On this day, September 29th, in 1970, the National Chicano Moratorium was still inspiring many smaller public demonstrations. 1 month earlier, the moratorium carried 30,000 Chicanos across the U.S. to Los Angeles streets in protest of the Vietnam War. These marchers recognized the disproportionate number of dead Chicano soldiers in Vietnam and the government's systematic recruitment of poor people and people of color to fight in the war. When they finally reached Laguna Park in East L.A., waiting for them were hundreds of armed LAPD who began harassing and attacking their peaceful protest. The protesters fought back. Police answered with tear gas and batons, and 3 Chicano marchers died. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Two more items for this week in Radical History for September 29th, 1982. U.S. Marines land in Lebanon to protect American interests. Also on September 29th, 1988, Veterans Peace Convoy wins lawsuit banning executive branch from regulating or prohibiting aid to a foreign country intending to relieve suffering. Though harassed continuously, peace convoys of all kinds make regular runs to Cuba and other humanitarian efforts throughout the world. This week in Radical History for September 30th, only have two items. Showing how much of a democratic, law-abiding nation Israel is, like in 1986 when Vanunu is kidnapped by Israeli secret police in Rome and taken back to Israel. Vanunu, who leaked details of Israel's secret nuclear weapons program to the London Times, was convicted in a secret Israeli military court and held in solitary confinement in Israel prisons for the next 10 years. Also on that date in 1991, CIA-financed military coup in Haiti overthrows a democratically elected government of Aristide. 3 years of protecting U.S. interests follow state-sponsored murder, rape, and theft. Why do we evade so much, you might ask? As poet and owner of the City Lights books once said, our government is a bird of two right wings. They are devoted to perpetuation and spread of corporate capitalism. This week in Radical History for October 1st, 1838, the Trail of Tears. 4,000 Cherokees die when 17,000 of them are forced west by U.S. President Jackson's Indian Removal Act. Also on October 1st, 1851, William Henry, a runaway slave and craftsman from Syracuse, New York, is arrested by U.S. Marshals and scheduled to be returned to slavery. 10,000 citizens of the city storm the sheriff's office, free Henry, and aid his escape to Canada via the Underground Railroad. Also on October 1st, 1860, San Francisco land speculator and self-entitled Norton I, Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico, bars Congress from meeting in Washington. Congress meets anyways. Also on this date in 1867, anarchist Fernand Pelletier is born in Paris. Encouraged anarchist participation in trade unions, which was actually revolutionary then, favoring direct action, sabotage, and general strikes, and the rejection of political parties. Quote, we are men without gods, without masters in fatherland, irreconcilable enemies of any despotism, moral or collective laws, dictatorships, and impassioned lovers of the culture of oneself. Lastly, in a state in 1949, Pacific Foundation starts the first radio station, KPFA, in Berkeley, California. Kudos to Pacific Foundation for all their efforts. And happy anniversary. This week in Radical History for October 2nd, only got a couple items. In 1947, radical Native American author and activist Ward Churchill is born. Here's a little bit of Churchill speaking.
I'm going to get serious about this and be anti-war. That's kind of like being anti-sky. Is there any particular war or form of war or more substantive content you might be against? My being against it doesn't affect it at all. I'm going to have to actually do something about it. And we need to be talking about what it is we're going to do and how we can do it better than it was done the last time, because I'm old enough to remember the late 60s and the anti-war movement, which is a major chunk of society at the time. And we're right here confronting the reality that we have to do it again, which means we didn't do it right then. Okay. So spare me all the rehashed Dave Dillinger rhetoric from the 1960s, because guess what? That didn't stop the Vietnam War. The Vietnamese stopped the Vietnam War. They won it, and they didn't win it with prayer vigils and mass marches.
Also on October 2nd, 1986, Reagan, who's sure there must be some commie involvement in the anti-apartheid movement, in a rare act of Congress doing the right thing, overrides Reagan's veto and passes the South African sanctions. This week in Radical History for October 3rd.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 3rd in 1909, white American feminist, anarchist, and free love advocate Lois Weisbrooker died at the age of 84. Lois belonged to a small group of women known as the Free Lovers, who pursued sexual autonomy and actively challenged society's ideas of sexual respectability. The Free Lovers sought to liberate women from the belief that sex was an all-male terrain. They encouraged women to acknowledge their own sexual desires, to pursue their right to enjoy sex, and not to be ashamed of their own bodies. In their quest to redefine women's sexuality, the Free Lovers stressed the importance of the woman's right to say no, as well as yes. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Also on October 3rd, 1932, all 164 students in the Kincaid High School in Illinois walk out on strike after they discover that the school is being heated with coal from a company employing scab labor. Also on October 3rd, folk singer Woody Guthrie dies on this date in New York City at the age of 52 in 1967. He helped transform the folk ballad into a vehicle of social protest and observation. He paved the way for Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and a host of other folk and rock songwriters who have been moved by the conscience to share experiences and voice opinions in a forthright manner. Here's just one of those singers.
At 11 in the morning, we all heard the factory blow. The blast took out the windows and the shrapnel fell like snow. We could get no help from out of town for half a day or more. We had near 1,000 casualties and beds for 94. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. It was worse than combat medicine, supplies were draining fast. Bandages ran out and antiseptics wouldn't last. I took all the able-bodied I could catch inside the door and made them help the doctors or go scrounge supplies and more. I invented laws to tell them, saying in such emergency, forget your usual job and boss, your orders come from me. I sent the cops to commandeer anything in reach, food or disinfectant, cloth or alcohol or bleach. And can you keep your head, your backbone or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. The janitor ran cleanup squad, the cook maintained supplies. The garbage man removed the ones who died before our eyes. The clerks burned all our papers to boil water on the fire, for sterilizing instruments as the body count went higher. A local health food herbalist brought everything he had. The painkillers were useful and the poultices weren't bad. A smacking cocaine pusher handed us his whole supply. The quality was lousy, but a few more didn't die. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. We did triage in the parking lot, ranked minor, major, grave. A sad-eyed fireman gave the stroke to those we couldn't save. Then sometime in the chaos, a director wandered in to tell us we were breaking rules, what trouble we'd be in. But if we'd swear the factory was not the fire's cause, and the harm was accidental, he'd forget the broken laws. The staff sneaked up and grabbed him and tied him to a door. He gave them blood transfusions till he hadn't any more. Your backbone or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. When that day was over and we'd saved all that we could, we saw that law and politics would hang us where we stood. We'd saved 800 lives but shattered all authority. I told them, people, save yourselves, put all the blame on me. I took my books and instruments and a few supplies beside, packed my car and ran away to open countryside. So now I live an outlaw, condemned by righteous men. But for all the lives I saved that day, I'd do it all again. And can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? We all found out the answer on the day it fell apart. Can you keep your head, your backbone, or your heart? You'll all find out the answers on the day it falls apart.
A couple more days with only a couple more items each to finish up this week's show, This Week in Radical History for October 4th. In an attempt to get his mafia friends back to the casinos in Cuba, on this date in 1962, President JFK calls for more CIA covert sabotage against Cuba, known as Operation Mongoose. Also on that date in 1974, ex-CIA agent Philip Agee publishes the names of 37 CIA spies in an effort to undermine the CIA terrorism policies and murdering, kidnapping, torture, assassination, and other crimes against humanity. The U.S. would try to get him extradited back to the United States for years, and would eventually pass a law seeming to aim right at people like Agee. The Intelligent Identities Protection Act was passed, and then directly violated, of course, during the Valerie Plame, Dick Cheney year, and Justice for All. This has been This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Glee Glee Studios. I'd like to thank the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York for the audio I borrowed for this show. Also thanks to the Slingshot Organizer and the Daily Bleed website for both information and inspiration for this show. I'll conclude this week's show with a short segment I produced called Bush vs. the Anarchist Revolution. Until next week's This Week in Radical History, as always and forever, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
From where Winston stood, it was possible to read, picked out on his white face in elegant lettering, the three slogans of the party. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
that when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
I remember how the meaning of words began to change. How unfamiliar words like collateral and rendition became frightening. While things like Northfire and the Articles of Allegiance became powerful. I remember how different became dangerous. I still don't understand it. Why they hate us so much.
I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people. Revolution without dancing is a revolution not worth having.
A reminder of what another anarchist and feminist, Emma Goldman, once said. If voting never really changed anything, they would have made it illegal.
Cause baby, I'm an anarchist, you're a spineless liberal.
I'm not afraid, I'm gonna fight, and I'm not ashamed of all getting drunk, and I don't care what you say, cause I believe in anarchy. I'm not afraid.
I'm the anarchy in the UK!